One of the startling things about inkjet is that it won't just print a two-dimensional image, you can print three dimensions. And this image came from Inca, from Bill Baxter, in the very early days of his startup. They discovered that if you printed the same image repeatedly with an ink that cures under UV light, you build up a three-dimensional image. And these little pillars of cured ink are the same pattern being printed on top. The angle arises because of the relative flight path of the drop of ink and the movement of the head. So it's actually a vector showing you the direction in which the ink arrives at the paper. But you keep doing it and you just build up a long column like a piece of Velcro or velvet. And that has now been turned into a whole new area of printing. This is printing real objects out of real engineering materials. The one on the top right is ceramic. It's alumina. It's a model of the Hampton Court maze, would you believe? Don't know why you'd want that, but it's a good demonstration. The one on the left is nylon, so it's an engineering plastic. And it's not terribly obvious because it's a rather dark image, but these are little springs which support the top surface and the bottom. It's designed as an acoustic material so that it absorbs sound by virtue of the tailor-made springiness of the surface. And that little piece, which I've actually got in my pocket here it is, you can stand on that, which is fairly stunning, and it takes a few seconds to print. So the reality now in 2011, compared to that vision of 75, is that book on demand really is not an inkjet subject. It's laser printing that is done. Custom fabrics and wallpapers, not quite. They're the most difficult inks to print you can imagine. Packaging, yes. Oh, sorry. Go back a step. Packaging has sort of almost completely succumbed to digital printing and inkjet in particular. Unlimited repeats, see that picture of the Cordoba Cathedral, huge images, ceramic tiles, and now rapid manufacturing, printing displays, PCBs, plastics, metal, ceramic, all coming with inkjet. This really is a technology that is going to revolutionise an awful lot of different things that we think about. Nokia have already demonstrated they can print a telephone. So you can make an entire telephone with the body, the display, the internal electronics, all entirely by printing, inkjet printing. Just to finish up, because this is really the subject of it, why do it, what does it take, etc. Alan's already addressed a little bit the subject of motivation. I think looking around my colleagues in the sort of entrepreneurial world of Cambridge, money is actually not a great motivation. What they're really motivated by is the challenge. It's the fact that you're going to go out there and sell this idea, brainchild, baby, whatever it is you've got inside, and bring it to other people. That's what really motivates people. And you hear people like John Taylor or Alan Sugar or Dyson talking. It's the challenge that is the motivation, the challenge of bringing something new to the world, something that the world hasn't thought of yet. That's what really motivates one. But there's also a lot of character issues involved, and particularly the first of the three that I've listed here, obsession. This is a characteristic which venture capitalists very much recognise, and they recognise in particular that it's awfully close to paranoia. And they recognise that some of the people they're going to deal with are going to turn out to be paranoid, and they are not going to make big, good businessmen as a result of it. But some of them turn out to be obsessive, and they are going to make good businessmen. And how you divide, how you determine the difference between the two is something which VCs admit to being extremely difficult. If you're going to do it, you have to be really courageous. And if I'm allowed, I'll just tell you an anecdote. In about 1989, just when we were thinking of Czar and just when the American corporate had decided to abandon us, I got a jolly good job offer. I got offered a job as a technical director of a company that I'd long known about, who operated from Durham, which is a really rather nice place to be. They were in textiles, which was a great something I enjoyed enormously. And I respected the company, and they were making electronic weaving machines. So right up my street. And my wife was delighted with the idea. She thought, fabulous idea. And I turned it down, And I turned it down at a time when the putative Tsar was itself being rejected by its then sponsor. But I knew that if we could make Tsar work, wasn't called Tsar in those days, of course, but if we could make that technology work, it was going to have an enormous impact throughout the world. The challenge of Tsar was much greater than the challenge of the weaving company. And I turned down that jolly good job offer and stayed with Tsar and did pretty well out of it in the end. And that's the sort of courage you need to follow your conviction. Everybody draws a hockey stick curve. This is the growth curve of a new company. And there are two things they don't tell you about that curve. The first is it goes like that. It flattens out. And the second thing is that it's got precipices all the way along it, chasms. You go up that curve, and at every step, there's a huge crevasse waiting to trip you up. And you need an immense amount of courage, both sort of personal and corporate, in order to jump those crevasses. And you've got to be persuasive. The world will not beat a path to your doorway because you made a better mousetrap. In fact, rather the reverse. The mousetrap industry will throw you out without a shadow of a doubt because they've already got a manufacturing system. They've already got a market for mousetraps. They don't want something new in the way of mousetraps. So you will not get a sympathetic hearing from the mousetrap world. You might succeed in starting your own business and making better mousetraps, as many people like Dyson, like the chap who invented the Black & Decker workbench, have done, and you may eventually get recognition for it. But you will need all the persuasive powers you can possibly imagine in order to get there. And the one single word that really describes all of those attributes is drive. And drive was something which Cambridge consultants always used to measure by psychological testing in its new recruits. And if they didn't have drive, they didn't take them on. I don't know whether they still do it or not. Do you still measure drive? Still do it. So you need drive. Thank you.